Welcome to this week's podcast of Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. Hey, Cindy, take it away.
Welcome back to Kicking It with Kidneys, a forum to discuss important topics for historically suppressed voices within communities of color. Well, we got a good one for you guys today, part two of caregivers. So, BJ, what is the word on the street?
Oh, hi, guys. Well, the word on the street today is we are going to hear from Mrs. Estella Ames. She's a 72-year-old caregiver who's been taking care of her husband. They have been married for 50 years, and she has got a story for us. She has quite a story. We're going to hear a little bit about the financial challenges that she's faced, the toll, the physical toll that being a full-time caregiver can take. We're also going to hear about her faith and her strength. And guys, when we say fierce, her fierce determination to be an advocate for her husband's health care. We've been talking a lot about that, but we're really going to hear it from Ms. Ames today. So let's listen.
So this is Cindy Barclay, and welcome again to Kicking It with Kidneys. I'm here with Mrs. Ames, who's a primary caregiver for her husband, who's on dialysis. So we're going to ask her some questions about her husband and, you know, how tedious this is and what a responsibility Ms. Ames.
It's overwhelming.
It's overwhelming? Oh, my gosh.
I don't mind doing it because I love him.
Yes.
We've been together 50 years.
Yes. Yes.
And I feel like if I was like that, he would take care of me or find someone to take care of me.
Right. So how long has Mr. Ames been on dialysis?
Since November last year.
Last year. Okay. And what caused his renal failure? What caused him to go into kidney failure?
Well, he's diabetic, I'm sure, eating the wrong things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they told me he shouldn't have been on metformin so long. He'd been on metformin for about 10 years.
Okay, so he's been a
diabetic. That had a lot to do with kidney failure.
Okay. Yes. But you said he was non-compliant by that. What do you mean? He didn't eat the right foods or?
I don't know. It's just that I'm on metformin myself, and they told me you need to get off it because it messed your kidneys up.
So who told you that?
Well,
the doctor?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so tell me something. As far as the responsibility for your husband, I understand that he's basically bedbound. Is that correct?
Yes, he is.
So he's total care?
Yes.
So do you work at all?
No. What I do is I get up in the morning. He's on 2 feet now. It's harder because to me, that's not enough food. But anyway, I give it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And
were you trained to care for him? You were trained how to administer that?
Yes, at the hospital.
Okay, they trained you with all
of that. And okay. I keep asking the doctor, when will he start eating here? And because then he'll feel more human.
Uh-huh.
And because he feel like, I don't want this. This is the way I'm going to live.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So I told him, in a few weeks, I'm going to start giving him Jell-O by the month, you know, sitting up straight. I was feeding him before, mm-hmm. but he was always like this, and then it went in his lungs.
Oh, my goodness.
So they said he had pneumonia, but they took all of that out of his lungs, so they refused to give him food just yet.
Yeah.
So
how often does your, since your husband's been on dialysis, how often has he entered back up in the hospital?
Oh, my Jesus. The 27th of January, 21. He was admitted there, and it's a year and 3 months that he's been going back and forth. He stayed here maybe 50 days out of that amount of
time. Yes. So most of his time has been
in the hospital. Yes.
Oh my goodness.
And it's hard on me because I need a surgery on my knees to get my cartridges back, mm-hmm. and I can't do it because I can't be down when he's down.
Yes.
So I use a scooter to get around. And I sit on a chair to dress him, and a nurse come once a day.
What about extended family? Do you have any other family members that come over and help?
My sister come when she gets off. She's in her 80s. She'll come and mop my floor for me, because I got a hard time standing.
Yes.
She'll mop my floor, but she doesn't help me with my husband.
Your husband. Wow, this seems like it's very challenging for you. And this is a date, 24 hours a day, seven days a week, job for you.
Yes. And he'll tell me, I want you to sit by me and talk to me. You know, he just want me to talk, but he won't talk. He'll say, But now, since he was in the hospital, he was asking me about, you know, so-and-so's son got hurt. I said, I forgot his name. Oh, I know his name. Uh-huh. Come on, let's go to emergency and see, can we see him? I said, I can't push that big bed down there. So I'm kind of glad that he's coming out of, he had brain bleed. He fell.
Okay.
He had brain bleed and his mind kind of come and go.
Right now, this is a struggle for you. You're running here, there, and everywhere. Mm-hmm. Have y'all talked about end of life, what you plan to do in the future?
I believe that God is in our life.
Okay.
And the doctors told me, would you want to live like him? Why don't you discontinue the dialysis and let him go? I said, who made you God? I said, that's my decision to make, not yours. Mm-hmm. When your better half gonna be down, this is gonna be your time to talk. I said, God is gonna make this patient an eye opening for you, doctor, that call yourself God. He gave you the knowledge to treat people and heal people, mm-hmm. but he didn't give you the knowledge to tell who goes and who don't go.
All right. All right.
I said, it's in God's hand.
Yes.
And you asked him if he wants to be resuscitated, asking me that over and over. And then he said, Jay, do you want to? Yes, I want to live. I said, that's your answer.
All right. So he was able to verbalize what he wanted. And you are a woman of faith.
Yes,
okay?
I am.
And you believe in the Almighty. And you believe that when your turn comes.
Yes.
When that time comes.
Well, you know what?
Uh-huh.
I've been there.
Well, you have.
They gave me up. At 17, as a Catholic, I had my last sacrament.
Uh-huh.
Because my head was split in two.
Uh-huh.
I went to one of them hard concrete, hit my head, and it split my head.
My goodness.
I was cut up, stuck up in the car. Yes. All this leg is cut up.
Yes.
And they threw me at the hospital. They didn't even stitch me. They said, she's not going to make it. And I was smelling. All of this was smelling. Mm-hmm. And they got a doctor. Clip me with them hog pins. Mm-hmm. Here I am, 73 next month.
Yes.
It's by the grace of God.
Yes.
He made a believer out of me
a long time. You got a testimony.
Yes.
You definitely have a testimony.
Yes. And I believe with all my heart that man will walk in the hospital one day. They're going to be shocked if they're still there. Yes. I'm still holding on to God, unchanging name.
Yes.
I know it's going to happen.
Yes. Well, okay. Well, Ms. Ames, thank you so much for the interview, and I really appreciate it. Well, I just want to put out a disclaimer right now, okay? I'm not quite sure. Do you girls, young ladies, hear me? I am not sure that I can be a primary caregiver all by myself for that length of time. And kudos to that young lady. I mean, I am so proud of her. I don't know if you guys know this, but her husband has since passed since we had that interview. It was sad. He was in the hospital. It was unexpected, according to her, you know. But one of the things that I heard her verbalize, I heard her say when she talked about her faith, she says that it's in God's hand. How do you guys feel about that?
Faith is big. And I heard that, you know, throughout. I personally admitted, again, Ms. Ames and Mr. Ames to the program. And from that day, just her verbalizing her spirituality, and it's only by the grace of God she's able to do this. So I'm sure that's what's given her the strength, you know, this time to get through.
Wasn't getting on the home dialysis program, Maria, a challenge for her? Tell me a little bit about that. I think you were involved in that process. What went down?
Yeah, we did not end up meeting formally face-to-face until this year. Ms. Ames introduced herself to us and the team October of last year. Like she said, they were trying to throw her husband away, put him in a clinic, a bed-bound man. They were trying to transfer him to dialysis 3 times a week via ambulance versus giving him the service that he technically qualifies for and that he needs. The issue is that they did not have adequate, what we call adequate insurance for bedside one-on-one dialysis. So once we try to request
that's where the nurse actually, you have a licensed nurse that actually goes into the home to perform the procedure, correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And so the type of plan that the patient had, they would support for home training, if Miss Ames, 73 years old, was going to train to do this delicate procedure for her husband, of course they would pay for that, but not for staff assisted, you know, one-on-one.
Right.
So she was very diligent. Yes. She would not give up. She called on the weekends when the on-call nurses were on call, just checking, what do I need to do? This is who I talk to. I just want to update y'all. Can you have the finance department call me on Monday? But she finally got it for her husband. But unfortunately, we didn't get to keep him too long. By the end, by the time that they authorized or said that they would reimburse for it, you know, he was towards the end. So it was very unfortunate, but she was a fighter. She still is.
She still is. My goodness. Well, BJ, you know, you've worked with patients a lot.
Oh, yeah. Particularly caregivers. And she just really typifies so many stories. There are so many universal things that you hear when you hear with Miss Ames' story. One of the things that Maria's talking about with faith, it's that hope that sustains them. You know, and they realize that they're going to be good and bad days, but they hope for the good days. And so that keeps them going for those one or two or three good days that they have. That keeps them going. One of the things we talked about last week, Maria had asked Rita a question about, well, who provides, you know, does someone pay? Can you get paid if you are a family member? And I made a statement about it during the Reagan years. So I want to correct that. The Caregiver Initiative or Caregiver Act happened much later. And what we see is that the Caregiver Act really started in the VA system. So that was something I would have been interested in to know if her husband was a veteran, because veterans really, their family caregivers can get resources that, you know, non-veterans don't always have access to.
Well, BJ, he wasn't a veteran. This is what shocked me. She told me, I said, Mrs. Ames, this is awful. You can't get any help. She said, no, I've worked, put 40 years into the system. My husband has worked for a major system for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And they told me that I would have to sell my house, which we just paid for, in our early 70s. You know, she said, I would have to sell my house. Now, mind you, that house had two bedrooms and it was 1,200 square foot. Okay, all of 1,200 square foot. So Rita, what's up with that? Why can't she have to sell my house? I mean, she's still alive.
Well, it's because of the resources they have, the money they have. They can only have so much to qualify for Medicaid, that is the one that pays for the provider, you know, the home health provider, and they have to meet the federal guidelines. And like she said, yeah, that would mean we would have to sell our house. Where are we going to live? You know what I mean? All this time. And a lot of, it's like a catch 22 for a lot of our patients. Mm-hmm. It is. It's like, you know, we work, we try to have a place to live, because I mean, they can't afford to pay for like we were talking about, a retirement place or even an apartment. Apartments are so expensive, especially a two bedroom apartment, which they definitely need for all the equipment they have. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's money. It comes down to money again.
And what I found out, Rita, I was just doing, you know, because after Maria asked the question and you gave the answer, I said, you know, I really wanted to go back and look at that. And what was shocking to me is that of the states that will provide, oftentimes they'll provide for adult children, but not spouses. Yeah. And I was looking at, and just according to 2021, New Jersey, Rhode Island, New York, California are just a few of the ones that are actually making inroads to provide funding for spouses to take care of.
Right. So. Well, and with those adult children, a lot of the times the families have gotten, governorship over, or what do you call that? What is the lame word for that? A guardianship over these children. So that's what it is. I mean, it's just their estate. So they do qualify for that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it comes down to the basics of the money. What kind of resources do you have? I mean, like she said, we've worked all these years to provide for ourselves and provide for our retirement. but we never think we're going to need that extra help, or we think that there's people that are going to help us. You know, we're surrounded by so many people, but mm-hmm. sometimes when it comes down to it that, you know, hey, I need help with your dad, or I need help with your uncle, can someone help me? Everybody's busy. And it's true. We are busy people. But it comes down to that sometimes. You have to go outside your circle and try to find resources that way.
Well, she'll be able to get her knee surgery now, unfortunately, yes. But who's going to take care of her?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
She's not in as bad a condition as her husband, but knee surgery, you're down for a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Maria, because that is also another universal issue for caregivers, is that they will generally put their health at risk. You know, they'll take their loved ones to the doctor. They'll make sure that they get their medications. Right. They'll make sure that they follow the rules of whatever they need to do. But when it comes down to them, and I've heard this so many times, where they put off medical needs.
Right.
Because they can't find someone. Or what you'll also hear, and we'll hear this from all of our caregivers, there's this feeling that nobody's going to take care of their loved one the way they are going to take care of them.
Well, BJ, so, I noticed that was a primary thing with her. She felt like she had to be the hospital. I think there was some issues with the type of care that her husband was receiving. And that was a major issue for her, that they're not going to take care of him like they're supposed to. You know, those were her standards, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know about just the standards, but I know that sometimes, like you say, they feel that if I'm not there, they may not provide that care, but I have to be there to advocate for my person.
Right. Well, not Rita, I'm going to make you laugh. You know, we've been short.
I know.
You know, everywhere's been a little short. So maybe that bedpan did get there in time.
That's
maybe.
Right. Yeah, but still, and I was reading somewhere and where it said that a DNR, I don't know if this, you know, whatever, a DNR, does that mean that we don't pay attention to our patients anymore? You know what I mean? People miss us on the rounds and stuff like that. What does that mean?
One of the things that she said that was kind of, she said that they wanted to throw her husband away, and she kind of gave them the riot act and said, you're not God.
Yeah. You know, and back to religion, what role does spirituality play in healthcare? I mean, I've had personal myself, you know, I had when my mom was diagnosed with cancer, the first thing my mom did was tell the doctor, will you pray with me? And you know what? Mm-hmm. That expression on that doctor's face, we're like, you don't want to pray with my mom? And it took a minute for him to react.
He believed in science.
And that's what, you know, later on, my sister, I told you guys, a lot of my sisters are nurses as well. And that's what she says, Mama, he's a man of science. And she says, what? I asked him to pray. He couldn't pray with me? And it just really took her aback that, well, isn't he taking care of me, mind, body, and soul? My soul needed some attention right now.
No, he wasn't. Okay, so you should have, I guess it was hard for your sister to let your mother know that everybody don't believe in the man upstairs. And I tell people all the time that I'm a woman of faith, but I believe it takes as much faith, evolution, and Christianity. To me, it's the same. You got to have faith.
Okay, well, faith without works is dead. So.
Dead.
Muerto. Muerto.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, y'all wrong for that. But let's go back. Okay. Do you guys think that healthcare is equal? Okay, now she said that they kept telling her, like you said, that, you know, it was time. Pull the plug on your husband. Mm-hmm. And I believe that the God that she believed in stepped in right on time, that he did pull the plug when he got ready to. Mm-hmm. So what is your analogy about that? Do you think that they work together? Do you think that, I mean, what are your thoughts? I'm not asking you guys to tell me your denominational affiliation or anything, but what do you think about that? Because I'm sure all of you that's on the panel have some type of beliefs.
Well, I would like to say something on that. I mean, we've been in a lot of situations with dialysis. We see patients that get up and walk and talk and go to work every day. And then you have patients at skilled nursing facilities that are literally just bodies. that they're cleaning and we're dialyzing and that's it. So I think there's a boundary that's there, but it's what your boundary is. As medical people, we should be honest with what science tells us that they're not going to thrive this way.
Right.
But at the same time, it's not up to us. So I do feel like that the medical professional or her doctors had the obligation to be very frank with her, but it was not their place to say, would you want to live like this? I felt like that was a little bit inappropriate. The doctors are looking at money too. You go into the hospital, you have a certain diagnosis code, and you've got to get out of there before a certain time period,
yeah.
Especially when you're dead weight on the system.
Yeah, and so that gentleman had frequent hospitalizations. So, you know, but again, I think that the doctor could have been a little tactful. That's my opinion.
Yeah, well, I think like Maria, we have to respect our patients' boundaries and we have to respect their beliefs. I mean, we can work together and sometimes we become creative. Like you say, she doesn't need to know if I'm Christian or not. She needs to know that I'm there to help her, support her, and advocate for her. But we do need to respect their boundaries. We do need to respect their beliefs. I think that goes a long way with your patients and the relationship you have with them and the service they get.
What are your thoughts, BJ?
I think there's two things that both of you are mentioning here. One, we do need to talk about the end of life because, you know, the difference between the two caregivers that we've heard so far. In our first caregiver, she was like, don't call the ambulance anymore.
Right.
I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, he says, resuscitate me. You know,
yeah.
So
at all costs, at any cost, resuscitate my husband. Yeah.
Resuscitate me. So there needs to be those end of life decisions, you know, or conversations, you know.
BJ, you had some statistics on caregivers and states that pay for whoever to do what.
Right.
All states, well, it's not equal in all states, right?
It's not equal, and it's very much like Rita says, there are restrictions, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to qualify for it. You can't just say, you know, I'm taking care of my aunt or I'm taking care of my, you know, sister and I
need. Where's my check?
So it goes back to money has a big thing, but part of it is what I think, again, it's come back to me, respecting where people are in their own spiritual place and their faith.
Oh, yeah.
And that can be very difficult. You know, I've had my own personal experience and I certainly wasn't as old as our caregivers, but at a younger point, I had a physician who told me people just weren't meant to live as long as they are. And that kind of struck me.
Now what, say that again.
He was explaining to me that due to medical technology and intervention, we are living longer and that we weren't designed as humans to live as long as we're living.
Oh, he's a
practicing doctor?
Yes.
He said he was a man of science, lady.
He does not do any diagnostics like lab work, x-rays, MRIs. He doesn't contribute to it, or does he contribute to it knowing that that's what's I don't understand.
No, I went in for a complaint and, you know, to be seen. Mercifully, this was acute care. So this wasn't my primary care.
Oh, that's the problem. You went to complain and his thing was that maybe...
But apparently he was telling many patients this because the brother that was in the room beside me said he wanted a real bleepity bleep doctor. So there's that.
So
apparently this was his philosophical pattern to explain to us the brevity of life for human beings. And therefore, if you come in here, and you are of a certain
age
demographic.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm.
You have lived longer than you should have.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I agree with Mrs. Ames. You're not God. But right. Like I said, my brother in the other room said it so much better than I could have said.
What did he say again?
I want me a real blank, blank, blank doctor.
That do you not think sometimes we have to say that though to get the care that we need? I mean, like she didn't say blankety blank to the doctor, but he said, but who are you to say
that you're not God?
You are not God.
But you know, there was another thing I wanted to bring up, and this was really interesting. And because you guys do have more hands-on, there was something that Miss Ames shared, and she said that when her husband had the tube, that wasn't living. And in fact, I think her real statement is she wanted him to feel more human. And so I think that sometimes reveals the struggle the caregivers have between providing care and going out on their own intuition. They want their loved ones to feel independent. And that's what we also heard last week when she said that when it comes down to diet, and you know, particularly for dialysis patients, I've learned a lot over the time we've been together, but dialysis patients, there are restrictions with diet.
Right.
And our previous caregiver said that her mom will say, the nurse said, I can have this if I do this. Yes. Well, in Mrs. Ames' case, he was on a feeding tube. Right. And she felt that it wasn't enough food for him, but he was laying in a position, got pneumonia, and they were saying, no, you can't have solid food. So in your dealings with caregivers, what is the issue or the conflict that sometimes caregivers have? They want to make their loved one feel normal and not sick and be independent, yet the medical requirements are counter to that. How do you deal with that?
Well, I have a problem with the whole thing. I'm getting real nervous right now because I'm thinking in 20 years, nobody's going to give a damn about me. Okay. I'm just going to be enough. You know, I'm serious.
If I'm here, I'll care.
Oh, okay. Okay. But all jokes aside, if I don't have enough financing, that means I've got to be hurdled off like cattle. Okay, into an environment. And even if I have family members or I have children, maybe they still have to work. So that adds an extra burden on them. There is no respite. I mean, I would think that, I think what we should advocate for is some type of respite for family members. You understand what I'm saying?
Because takes people speaking up, like doing this show and stuff like that, showing how the providers are struggling and people going and lobbying and doing all this stuff as well. I mean, it just can't be the providers or the healthcare professionals doing it. That's why we need to continuously encourage our patients and, you know, people in general to talk about this stuff. If we don't, then it doesn't change any. We're having to deal with our seniors and like DJ said, we're living longer because medicine is making us able to live longer. So we're all going to have to deal with it. So it's everyone's problem. It's not just my problem or your problem that Maria may not.
Well, what we're dealing with today is we're dealing with family caregivers. And we did talk about last week how many billions of dollars that unpaid care the family members are providing. Yeah. So the question is, if family members are unable to do it, then what happens to those people who fall in the cracks?
Stay in the hospital. I have a patient right now, family, has no family, nowhere to go, not able to really live on their own, not because of a fault of their own, but has a brain injury. Right. So he is unstable. He's able to, you know, do basic ADLs, but, you know, paying rent, you know, getting places. He just has a dysfunction or a disability. Let me not say dysfunction, but a disability that does not allow him to live alone. And family has done this.
Wow.
So he has nowhere to go until they try to find some type of, you know, of course he has different multiple comorbid conditions and other things that are going on. So it's not just placement here at maybe a group home. You've got dialysis as well. He's got an infection. He needs a wound back. You've got to have home health come to this. So it's a complicated case. So if you don't have anybody there, your weight, you're just dead weight.
And sometimes your life is shortened.
Yeah.
I mean, because there is.
Speaking of shortened life, there's a term called euthanasia. And I can see it more and more happening in the United States of America. Anyway, that's a whole nother program, y'all.
That's a different topic. That's a big topic, lady.
That's a big program. You know, I think you get a little bit of that, and you get Maria and Rita, you guys, because you actually work with people. Mm-hmm. What is it called? Help me here. Where you make a determination on how much care you want, and you sign.
Advanced directive.
Thank you. That borders on that, does it not?
Somewhat.
Yeah, but the problem is we don't do it.
Yeah.
Upon admission, when I talk to a patient, that is one of the things that I talk about.
Right.
90% of us, people of color, do not have anything in place. Then everybody want to be howling and fighting when Big Mama is not responding, or I want her to live, and this, that. That's the thing. There's not a conversation.
Not only that, we're not going to give you her kidney either.
Maria's, it is a reality. And then I go in there and bring it up as a social worker, and they give you this look. Like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, okay, let's go over it, and we'll go over it slowly. And some families, they do react to it, and they're like, oh, I understand. I'm like, well, you wouldn't want your mother's legacy or your father's legacy of having this wonderful and beautiful family, you know, go by the wayside because you guys can't decide what to do with them and actually do what they want you to do. I mean, we've seen, Maria, you know, we've seen families break apart because they can't decide, like Maria says, if Big Mama's going to be on the machine or not, or are we going to, you know, take her off of it or not, you know, because the quality of life is better that way or whatever. But you see families bickering at the, you know, deathbed, at their parents' deathbed, and it's horrible.
But that may, do you think that that may be a consequence of post-COVID, where people are almost required as a part of admission to have an advance directive? Make a decision.
Yeah.
Because time I've ever gone into a hospital, that paperwork is a part of it.
It's a part of
all you have to do is acknowledge the paperwork. They will ask you upon admission or whatever. They will ask you, but they don't follow up to say, I noticed that you did not have an advance directive.
Right.
Can we have someone to sit down with you and do this now? You see, it's all formality. That's the problem. We just do a lot of, it's formality because it's the law. It doesn't mean anything to some people, you know.
It's formality until it isn't, because we're talking, who benefits from you having an advance directive? The family, surely, but the insurance companies, eventually.
Well, now remember, if you don't
back
have
down to money,
nothing is in place, I don't have to pay out anything. Remember, I don't have to. If you don't have an advance directive, then a decision is made and you just go, that means that now that you were insured and now you're not. So now
that's your advance directive.
But that's back to your BJ, your original question. For me, the trend, I think it's more on the forefront now, you know, with COVID and stuff, but families have always struggled with this. And I've been working dialysis a long time. People just struggle with it. You sit with patients in their 30s or 40s or even their 50s, and you talk about this and they're like, we've never heard about this. Where did you come up with this? I'm like, I didn't come up with this. This is something part of your plan, your care of, you know, plan of care. And they're like, we've never heard about this. And it's like a shock to them, but nobody wants to talk about death and dying. That's not a conversation people like that.
It's a part of life.
It is a part of life, but it's on the back burner because no one's planning on dying.
Misunderstanding, and maybe not so much misunderstanding, based on historical treatments of certain groups, there is that element of, well, if I sign this paper saying don't resuscitate me, then you're just not.
Are you going to try?
Are you going to even try when it's not, you know, the end of the road? You could, you know.
Well, DNR is kind of final, isn't it, Maria? I mean.
Yeah, I just, you know, lastly wanted to ask you guys, you know, we have to get funding from somewhere. And of course, there's lobbying and politics and all that other stuff. But if you want more money in this section, it's got to come from somewhere. So that's probably going to be more taxes. And all you guys ready to pay more taxes to have that net of a caregiver recompensation if that was what you guys needed.
Do you know how much money we spent on Senate hearings?
I do not.
Okay. I hear what you're saying. It's all about choice and the people in power and what they choose to spend money on. Okay. I think people of color have always been placed on the back burner. We're there for elections. They make promises to us. And because we are a people of faith, we fall for it each and every time, not expecting very much. I think, BJ, in some of our episodes before, you kind of mentioned something about expectations with minorities. You know, when we put these people in office, then we should expect to get, you know, what we paid for, but we don't. And how do we change that?
I think the other thing is that there are organizations that are advocates for caregivers. They are. And almost each condition has advocacy for that. You know, I know that for Alzheimer's, diabetes, you have organizations, and a component of that deals with caregiving and respite, providing respite care, providing medications, providing people to come in and do home health care. So those resources are there. They're just so limited. It's so massive. Like I said, I'm very excited about the person that we'll hear next week, because she represents a whole nother example of caregiving.
Yeah.
But it goes back down to Maria's question, you know, are we willing to pay those taxes? You know, now for people in my age bracket, hell yeah, pay it.
But right. Why is that? Is it because you get your...
Because I'm going to need it.
I'm with BJ. It's true. We are going to need it. We're there.
I'm in the queue.
Yeah. Okay. Not the queue.
I'm in the queue. But the reality of it is, one of the big issues, if you start looking at it from a demographic position, my age group was a huge demographic. We don't have that demographic to pull the money now.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to get on the soapbox right now talking about where our tax dollars go, but we do know that there are ways that our tax dollars could be allocated to help people who are in need. Yeah. And there are a lot of people in need. But family caregivers are those people that suffer in silence.
Yes,
you do not see them. You see other groups. You know, there are poster boys and poster girls and faces for these other groups. Very rarely do you hear or see family caregivers, because they're going to do it. And that's the other thing. They are going to do it. Now, Maria, you got that where the family goes like this. But usually there's that Obi-Wan Kenobi in their family. Mm-hmm. There's that one person who will step up, and maybe they're not always the person that should, but they do.
Some care is better than no care, right?
Not always.
I know, but sometimes that's what it comes down to. And going back to Maria's question
that's
about
why they have what is it? Health and Human Services.
That's right. Adult Protective Services.
Yeah, Adult Protective Services. There's a reason they are there. So
Well, back to Maria's question about the taxes, and BJ, like you said, that money is there. It's how it's being allocated. Mm-hmm. And like you said, caregivers are silent and they don't make an uproar. You know, that was a greasy wheel that makes the noise, gets the attention. Mm-hmm. I think that's the other thing. If we don't say anything, hey, Health and Human Services has this amount of money.
Marita, Mrs. Ames said something and they told her she had to give up her house.
Well,
is one person.
It's one person.
But we
do you know how many people of color
person.
There are that we can make
who,
that
who
change?
Who told her that, Cindy?
Probably Medicare.
It was Medicare and Medicaid. Yeah. Okay. Primarily Medicaid, because they have something called provider services. You would know more about that, Rita.
Yeah. And it does. It says that you need to put
income.
Yeah, you need to put down all your resources.
Yeah. So you have to disclose everything. And when you say you got a house, hey, not that you're renting. This is what's interesting.
The American dream for me has always been to have that white picket fence in a house, right? Yeah. She got that. It's just 1,200 square foot, but it's hers.
It's hers.
And now that I'm old and my husband is debilitated and I'm going to need some help myself, you're telling me, okay, if you really want some help, then you need to give up that you've worked for, that American dream that you've worked for. Something is not quite right.
Yeah. And Cindy, the other thing is that with the services that are out there, a lot of people don't apply for that because it is, you have to disclose all this information for them to tell you no. You know, or they tell you, well, yes, you do qualify for these services, but once your loved one is gone, we may, because I think the word it says, we may take that resource away. That
I was going to ask you that. So what if you don't disclose that mama left me $50,000? And can they?
They're very smart. You know, they're not just going to trace it for 1 year. They go back, and don't quote me on this, I want to say 5 to 7 years of whatever resource, you know, money that I had and resources in my name or my husband's name, they're going to go back and they're going to want to know, where did this $50,000 go?
That's called fraud.
Yes.
Oh, so, that's fraud.
So yeah, it's not like,
and then you can get services because you'll be in jail. So yeah. There's that.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not like they're just going to say, okay, Rita, you can have this. No, they're going to want to know where, you know, they're going to investigate. That's their jobs, because it's not like BJ saying, people do commit fraud. They do. If I can get a service and no one cares, I'm
understand that, but I've been in the medical profession for about 40 years. Well, just about 40 years now.
Telling her age.
I know, giving it away.
Okay, just about 40 years now, and I've seen more devastation than I have abuse. I'm just going to be honest with you. But what they do is they take those few people that abuse the system and make them poster children, you know?
Well, it scares the rest of the folks off, scares everybody else away. If I go ask for this, they're not, I mean, coming back to the people of color, we get scared off by that. I mean, I know my culture, it's like, I'm not going to go apply for, you know, a caregiver. They're going to want to know all my stuff. And if we have this, they're going to say no anyway. So let's just see if somebody will volunteer. So I think back to Maria's original question, we need to advocate for ourselves. Miss Ames did a great job. She advocated for her husband. But if we get together, we're such a big group. If we just say something, we can get something done. But it takes all of us to work together.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying, Rita, and I hear this, it's not necessarily the Mrs. Ames of the world that need to be advocating. It's those who are not caregivers yet.
Yes.
Who need to advocate, who are not having to try to take care of a loved one and then also go out and be political drummers.
We're all going to need a caregiver. Yeah. We're all going to be a caregiver.
Yeah.
Have known someone that's been a caregiver.
Yeah.
So somehow that caregiver title is going to be given to us at one point or another in some fashion.
Yeah.
Mm. So.
And as my father would say, just keep on living. So BJ, I understand part three. We have part three coming up.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We have part three. And as I said, one thing that what was so good about this series is that we really have shown the various ways that caregiving can be manifest. You know, we've talked to a child, adult child, taking care of her mom. Today, we listened to a wife taking care of her husband. In our next episode, we're going to talk to an adult caregiver who is taking care, or a caregiver who's taking care of her adult child. And so that's another layer. There are different circumstances and conditions, and we're going to talk about some of the same universal issues, financial concerns. We're going to talk about, you know, just the universal understanding of caregivers, who's going to provide the best care. But I think in our next one, we will also see another element of what happens when people assume that role of being a caregiver, but they also find a way to carve out a life in addition to being a caregiver. And that's something that sometimes people don't always know how to do. So yeah, that is a not to be missed episode. And
so if you guys out there would like to weigh in on our conversation, log in to kickingitwithkidneys.com. And what else, Maria? A blinking up. What are you young people doing? Twitter and
Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
Okay. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. See you next week. The views expressed on this podcast are educational and opinion-based. These are not medical doctors.
Be sure to catch us on social media on our website, kickingitwithkidneys.com, also on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.